Hey, this is David Poe, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
The Catskill Food Pantry is located in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church at 50 William Street in Catskill. The pantry is open to the public every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Healthy food is a right. For more information, please feel welcome to visit the pantry. Call us at 551-299-2456. Check the website at catskillfoodpantry.org or connect with us on Facebook at Catskill Food Pantry.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more. Plus, advance notice of close-up conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Socrates, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org/support. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Alyssa Levy and Adam Ames in Brooklyn, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul vetoed a bill to expand the eligible campaign contributions for matching public funds. New York has a new system of publicly funded campaigns beginning with the 2024 election. Publicly financed elections are intended to give less wealthy New Yorkers and their political contributions more weight against those from donors with more disposable income. But Hochul said, and I quote, signing this bill would effectively reduce the impact of small donors on elections, end quote, in, and I quote, direct contravention of the purpose, end quote, of the public campaign finance program. Groups supporting transparent government and public campaign finance advocates were also opposed to the legislation that would have allowed for the first $250 of any contribution to a campaign in an election cycle to be matched by state funding. So far, 168 candidates have filed applications to take part in the public campaign finance program, but Hochul is not among them. State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli is the only statewide candidate to enroll in the program at this time. And you can read more about this story in the Times Union. William J. Kimball reports in the Daily Freeman that Socrates Town Supervisor Fred Costello hopes that problems with his town police department are over in 2024. Costello said, and I quote, "We all know the challenges that law enforcement faces from a recruitment perspective, and instability does not help, but makes those challenges worse. We went through a period of instability, and it's clear that complicated our efforts to recruit new officers. With Chief Nuzzo, that goes away instantly, and I think he brings credibility to the department," end quote. Retired State Lieutenant Colonel Robert Nuzzo becomes chief on January 1st after months of controversy between the town board and former Chief Joseph Sinagra. The former chief retired after a state report recommended the firing of an officer, which led to Sinagra being put on leave. Costello said he expects the transition to Nuzzo to go smoothly. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Sarah Rizzo reports for News 10 that the Manhattan store, Mel the Bakery, has moved to Warren Street in Hudson. Nora Allen opened the bakery on the Lower East Side in 2020, but her building was sold earlier in the year. Allen says, and I quote, "I found this location in Hudson, and it checked so many boxes for the needs of our production," end quote. The bakery specializes in naturally leavened sourdoughs with less common grains, such as einkorn and poppy seeds. They also sell croissants, pastries, sandwiches, tomato pie, and focaccia, and are only open on weekends. Read more about this story at News 10. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, December 29th. Local early morning temperatures range from 39 degrees in Tannersville to 43 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 42 degrees. If you were awake at all yesterday, you know what it's going to be like today. Fog will be rolling around all day along with light and or scattered rain. A high of 48 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures drop to 39 degrees as the rain continues. Tomorrow, still pretty cloudy. High of 43. More rain chances all day long. 29 degrees overnight takes us into a finally dry-looking Sunday with a high of 40. Monday, still dry with a high of 39. Sunset today will be at 4:17 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see there is a sunspot on the other side of the sun, so violent its rumbles are apparent on this side, and that is due to swing into view early next week. Amateur astronomers are watching Comet 12P, which is already viewable by the naked eye, but if you can train a telescope on the celestial body, you can see a predictable cryovolcanic eruption. Every 15 days, its spin seems to light up an ice volcano, and it just goes nuts. Plasma winds will be slow at 379 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 83. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air. But we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. You're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money, and then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
Shoegaze. An inspired melody from an experimental band that no one knows about. Lost in 10 million songs. After the gig, crossing the parking lot in the deserted town. Getting into the beat-up Subaru, never to return. Play your flute sound, little elfin birthday child. Spicy tofu and kimchi waiting when your song ends. What's for dessert? Fresh shoegaze with frozen art sauce and pink noise sprinkles.
Ha 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 ha.
The light of lotus blossom, anti-paranoia air freshener, glows sky blue when the easy piano version of simple well-being is nearby. I'm feeling good, breathing in and out, supported by my friends, standing on a stage that is nothing other than life as it actually is. Soft old dogs, chocolate croissants, new sneakers, an honest discussion, a few laughs, without winning or losing. Sure, we have to pay the rent, but if we work together, the Light Up Lotus Blossom Anti-Paranoia Air Freshener plays a happy chip tune from its tiny speaker.
Catskill, that's Rodney Allen Greenblatt with the song Shoegaze from his 2023 album Box with Tubes.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
All of this, I think, at least before the general, is screaming out for the Supreme Court to say, here's who is disqualified under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and here's who is not.
Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson says the Supreme Court needs to rule on former President Donald Trump's right to hold office. On Thursday, Maine's Secretary of State removed Trump from the primary ballot there, a week after the Colorado Supreme Court also disqualified him because he led the January 6th insurrection. The Colorado GOP is appealing that ruling, and state party chair Dave Williams says if Trump isn't on the ballot, they could ignore the primary election and award delegates by caucus.
When you have unelected judges who were appointed by our opposition party dictating who we may nominate and who we may potentially vote on, we can't allow that to stand.
Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley is backtracking from remarks in which she failed to acknowledge slavery as the cause of the Civil War. Haley tells a New Hampshire radio station it obviously was.
What I was saying was, what does it mean to us today? What it means to us today is about freedom. That's what that was all about. It was about individual freedom. It was about economic freedom.
The subject's been tricky for Haley. She defended states' right to secede, but she also acted to take down the Confederate flag after a white supremacist murdered 9 black Charleston churchgoers. Election integrity units haven't confirmed the rampant 2020 vote fraud claimed by Republicans. A Washington Post investigation found fewer than 50 convictions out of millions of votes cast in 6 states. And Nicole Porter with the Sentencing Project says many were former felons registered to vote by mistake.
That's a failure of the states. That's a failure of Texas. That's a failure of Florida. That's a failure of Tennessee and other states like North Carolina, because the information is unclear.
Arizona election officials are using AI to create deepfakes as a trial run ahead of what could be a flood of disinformation next year. Secretary of State Adrian Fontes has run simulations of himself and others to see how good they are.
So that we can have a live exercise where election officials can in real time react to scenarios that get thrown at them.
Colorado Congresswoman Lauren Boebert is moving to a more conservative district. The increasingly unpopular Republican faced a tough re-election fight, but says she'll now seek the seat of retiring Representative Ken Buck.
It's the right move for me personally, and it's the right decision for those who support our conservative movement.
Boebert says she was driven out by Hollywood elites and progressive money groups, but the move's drawing fire from Republicans, including 4 already in the race. And a federal judge has approved a new Georgia congressional map, likely to keep the state's Republican edge. The map creates a new black majority district, but breaks up another dominated by a minority coalition. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Michigan Supreme Court decided December 27th not to hear an appeal, keeping Donald Trump on Michigan's primary ballot. But unlike Colorado's recent decision, it was not decided on the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment. Earlier in the month, the Michigan Court of Appeals ruled that former President Donald Trump must stay on the primary ballot because, by Michigan law, primaries are a political party function and the Secretary of State has no power to remove a candidate. The Michigan Supreme Court agreed, but refused to take a position on whether Trump is a qualified candidate under the 14th Amendment, Section 3. Justice Elizabeth Welch dissented, agreeing with the lower court's interpretation of the Secretary of State's powers, but arguing the court should have also heard the qualification merits. Justice Welch also pointed out that Colorado's election code says party-submitted candidates for a primary ballot must be qualified, which Michigan's does not. Since the ruling applies only to the primary, plaintiff Free Speech for People said that it may consider another case if Trump advances. The state-specific Michigan decision is unlikely to affect the many other pending cases. Lawfare is tracking Trump qualification cases in 14 states, and as of December 27th, an appeal of the Colorado decision in the U.S. Supreme Court. Find much more in the groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
New music from Hudson-based band Babehoven there. That's songwriter Maya Bon and collaborator Ryan Albert in Babehoven.
Saturday, December 30th and Sunday, December 31st, count down the 100 biggest songs on the radio at WGXC from the year 2023. That's right, count down the top 100 of 2023, Saturday, December 30th and Sunday, December 31st on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Look to see. The sun and earth are not found in books or on an iPhone 14. Dive into the sea of harmony and distortion, and if you can, discover the sun and earth in the bathroom mirror. The spring flowers are speaking. The summer light hums. Even the cold beer and warm noodles have something to say. They say they have found the sun and earth.
that was Catskill's Rodney Allen Greenblatt with Look to See from his 2023 album Box with Tubes.
Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our conversation today is with David Chinnery, Rensselaer County's Cornell Cooperative Extension Horticultural Turf Management Senior Resource Educator. Wow, that's a mouthful. David is the go-to guy for many of the surrounding counties and is in demand as an instructor for the Master Gardener Volunteer Trainings. David, how long have you been involved in the Cooperative Extension? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your history and also kind of your interest in turf management.
Well, thank you for having me here today. I go back to 1989 when I started working for Cornell Cooperative Extension in Westchester County. And at that time, I did all sorts of horticulture programs, and I wanted to move upstate. So the job in Rensselaer County came open in 1996. It was a turf grass position. It was regional. I didn't particularly like turf grass, but I said, I want to move. And I came up here and I adapted and learned turf grass. So now I am a turf grass person, and I'm not really regional anymore, but I certainly help out the other Cooperative Extension counties and Master Gardener programs.
Could you define what you mean when you say turf grass? It's probably obvious, but you're using that kind of as a term. So what does it exactly mean?
Well, that's a good question too, because I remember giving one of my first lawn talks for an hour. I talked about turf grass and lawns. And then at the end of it, a lady in the front row raised her hand and said, "What is turf grass?" So it is good to define. What we mean by turf grass is anything that we mow and we walk on. That's how I look at it. So that includes lawns, sports fields, utility areas, golf courses, those types of areas where we're growing grasses and we're growing them short and we're using them for, you know, human activities for the most part.
So David, no doubt you've seen significant changes in turf management practices over the years. And I know from attending a class, you've always taught respect for the environment in turf care. Could you tell us about some of the biggest changes you've seen?
Sure. You know, being around for 33 years, I'm getting to be the old timer, but there have been a lot of changes in that time. The first one I always think of is that we have a no phosphorus and lawn fertilizer law that came about in 2012 in New York State. And that basically said we're not supposed to be putting phosphorus on lawns that are receiving fertilizer. With a few caveats, if you're starting a new lawn, you can still use a fertilizer, like a starter fertilizer that has phosphorus. Or if you have a soil test that says you need phosphorus, but that law hopefully is working to reduce phosphorus runoff into waterways, lakes, places like that. So that's a big one. Certainly the grasses themselves have been changing. There are people called turf grass breeders, and they've been working to make grasses that grow slower, grasses that are better tolerant to drought, grasses that are more pest tolerant, grasses that need less fertilizer. So the industry, if I can call it that, and the research is really moving towards more sustainable lawns because the grasses themselves are changing. I think people are interested very much in low-mow lawns, no-mow lawns, lawn mowers that are not going to be as polluting. So that's a big change, and we're moving in that direction. I think we have more alternative, what I call alternative practices, rather than just going to the store and buying a bag of fertilizer and a bag of grub control and just putting it on sort of mindlessly. There's been a lot of work on trying to figure out how we can use less pesticides, how can we use products more effectively, things like overseeding, which I've been working on for a long time, reducing the amount of herbicide that people use. There's new management things for grubs coming along, which is great. So, you know, back in 1989, some people wanted that stuff and we just didn't have it. And now we have more alternatives like that. And the last one, which is really very new, is that we have genetically engineered grasses coming along. So that's going to be very interesting.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you just mentioned in terms of chemical overuse? Because I know certainly when you drive by like golf courses and they're just so pristine, I always feel like they're pouring, you know, huge amounts of chemicals. And a lot of my neighbors, I think, put a lot of chemicals on their lawns. A little bit about that and kind of what kind of education's out there and what the trends are and what people seem to be doing in terms of that.
Sure. Well, you know, the world is geared to marketing, right? People buy what they see, people buy what they know. There's a lot of money that is behind lawn care products. So, you know, something like a step program that tells people to, you know, put these things on in this order and you're going to have results. That is really attractive to people because it's sort of easy to do. It's in front of them. It's at the store. They don't have to think about it a lot. So, you know, we're asking them to step back, to think about your lawn, to understand what's going on in your lawn. And that takes a lot more work. So we're kind of up against that marketing and sort of ease factor. But I take hope in that people like Master Gardeners and certainly a lot of concerned people that, you know, have a lawn, but they don't want to make it something that is going to be detrimental to the environment. They want to be more environmentally friendly. They're the ones that are really looking for, you know, the information that is a little more involved. And certainly I want to say golf course people have changed a tremendous amount too. There's a huge interest among golf people of being more environmentally friendly. So I think that's a big change too. You know, they're under pressure to have good turf grass because that's what they need to have. But there's a lot of folks that want to do alternatives. So I think the message is getting out there. I would like it to happen faster. But it is changing. So I take heart in that, I guess.
I don't know if this is alternative or not, but my lawn, I basically mow the weeds. It's one of those things where I don't think I've ever put fertilizer on my lawn, and I don't think I've ever put herbicides. So is there anything wrong with that? I mean, it looks like grass. It's not beautiful, but I know there's a lot of kind of what you would call weeds, clover certainly, that's pollen and nectar for the bees, and there's plantains. Is there anything wrong with my just doing kind of nothing?
No. If you came to my lawn, I would call it a weed test laboratory because I have every weed known to man. I'm a big fan of clover because I'm a beekeeper. I think those lawns are fine. If that's, you know, what you want, to me, that's okay. The only caveats I would say with something like that would be if you have a lot of crabgrass. And then that crabgrass dies in the fall and you have bare ground over the winter. That's a source of erosion and nutrient runoff. So we like to see really dense lawns because dense lawns hold the nutrients. They slow down the water. So areas that sort of go bare with crabgrass or annual weeds, I'm not really thinking that's helping the environment. I would rather see dense growth there. So that, you know, is actually probably more environmentally friendly. So sometimes doing a little bit like fertilizing your lawn and having it denser may actually be better than having a lawn that really is causing, you know, or allowing nutrients to run off. So, but I think, you know, there shouldn't be any pressure involved. I always run across people that live in upscale housing and there's this pressure to have a beautiful lawn or to try to achieve that. And I don't like social pressure. I don't think people should do that to each other. So I don't subscribe to the social aspects of lawn care.
So we noticed that there's a push to plant more naturalized landscapes and alternatives to green grass lawns. Could you tell us a little bit about some IPM practices people could use instead?
Well, as far as if you want to have a lawn and you want to take care of it, I would say, you know, do a soil test, learn what your nutrient levels are. If you need phosphorus, you might need to add it, but you probably don't need to add phosphorus. But the soil test tells you a lot of interesting information for any kind of gardening. So I'm a huge fan of soil tests. So contact your county cooperative extension office and they can help you with that. That's kind of step one. The overseeding, which is something we've worked on a lot, is just using grass seed, especially perennial ryegrass or tall fescue, and putting that down in the fall several times. And that will increase the density of the lawn. That will cover up the bare spots. And then the next year, you're going to have more grass. And it also works to crowd out the crabgrass. Crabgrass is probably the number one weed that is in New York State lawns. And people put on pre-emergent herbicide in the spring. So we would like to get them to use grass seed in the fall, build up the density of the lawn. Then you don't need to use the pre-emergent herbicide. And that's something that Cornell people, Iowa State, and me, we've been kind of the three people that have been pushing that. And that's actually starting to get out in the mainstream. So I think that's really exciting. That's my top tip, really, for IPM sort of a lawn. And then, you know, if you have grubs, we have some alternative methods for controlling those. Chinch bugs are a problem that come along. We have grasses that are chinch bug resistant. So, you know, if you have a really bad chinch bug problem, maybe you need to use an insecticide, but then don't plant the same old grass. Try to find the chinch bug resistant grasses, use the genetics, and then you'll probably have less chinch bugs in the future. So there's a lot of little tricks like that. Now, that, of course, that's not marketed out there and that's not sold easily in the store, but we can help people with those sorts of things.
New York City clean energy advocates want National Grid to rethink its geothermal pilot program. The program will test the efficacy of a thermal network in New York City public housing buildings in Brooklyn. However, a peer review from the Sane Energy Project and Egg Geo finds the program only tests how thermal networks heat a building, not heating and cooling. Instead, National Grid is putting window heat pumps in the building for cooling, but these can also be used for both heating and cooling. Gene Bergman with the Sane Energy Project says this isn't the best way forward.
It's like you put in a system that does two things and you only use one. You do that in your window, and then you also do that in the building. You're doubling the capacity and doubling the cost, but only getting the basic functions of each.
She adds that given the location of the buildings, this could serve as a great test for thermal energy. The other issue with National Grid's pilot program is that some of the buildings they power in upstate New York have been operating both heating and cooling to great success. Bergman says talks have been ongoing with NYCHA to develop thermal energy in their buildings without a utility. Another issue with thermal energy is that it hasn't reached the same level of popularity as other clean energies. New York State has made numerous investments in solar, wind, and hydroelectric, but thermal energy lags. Bergman explains it's because thermal energy isn't as well understood.
Thermal energy networks, because they work on recycling and balancing energy among many different units, it's a totally different kind of thing from the commodity that we're used to. You're not just purchasing heat, you're selling heat back into the system, in effect.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation to make it easier to install thermal energy systems. The legislation reduces the cost of installing geothermal wells with the hope of helping the state meet its building decarbonization requirements. It also changes how certain wells drilled deeper than 500 feet are regulated. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Working families in Appalachian, Ohio face a crisis. Child care that's unavailable or costs too much. Even before the pandemic, 60% of rural Ohioans lived in a child care desert, with three times as many children as spots at licensed providers. Noble County mom Erin Finley is fighting the wait list.
I'm a single parent in household. We only have one income, and I now pay more for childcare than I pay to rent my home, than I pay to have my car.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics says childcare issues force as many as 100,000 Americans to stay home from work each month. Finley says working parents must rely on babysitters or unlicensed in-home providers.
I think it even makes it more difficult to find care when you've been in a few situations and had to remove your child due to safety concerns.
Congress is debating legislation, and some companies are offering help as a way to reduce turnover. UPS is expanding on-site emergency child care for employees. The Minnesota group Route One is working on two problems at once, boosting Black, Brown, and Indigenous farmers while also addressing food insecurity. Founder Marcus Carpenter says with a partner company, they're refurbishing old shipping containers so city farmers and farmers of color can create so-called freight farms.
They implement hydroponic technology that allows urban farmers and other farmers who don't have access to land outside to be able to grow fresh produce inside these shipping containers.
The American Family Insurance Institute for Corporate and Social Impact helps fund Route One. The Institute's Naira Jordan says the country's independent farmers struggle to access funding and markets to sell their crops.
And that's especially true for the small but growing number of Black, Brown, and Indigenous farmers.
Freight farms can target fresh produce and culturally appropriate foods directly to folks who need it, including the 25% of Black Minnesotans who are food insecure. There was a time AM radio was king, but now some automakers want to exclude it from new vehicles. Rural farm broadcasters are pushing back, making their case to Congress.
Local AM radio stations carrying local news, local content, and local weather conditions and emergency response information are just critical.
Ben Steffen with the Nebraska Rural Radio Association says they support the AM for Every Vehicle Act to keep AM in every dashboard at no additional cost. He points to countless cases of live coverage in emergencies like weather events.
Part of the reason it's so important in vehicles is that people who are traveling instantly can access that kind of local information.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
We'll be right back.
Catskills' Reckless Eric from his 2023 album Leisureland, that is Standing Water, on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
The track from Chicago-based sound artist Leah Cole's 2023 album The Ceiling Reposes, with Cole's cello and sampled sounds of static on the Moment a Zipper. Thank you.
Thank you.